Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at something pretty huge in education, started with this massive promise, right, to basically save global education.
Absolutely. Drew in millions of students. And then, well, it kind of crashed and burned, at least in terms of the initial hype.
Exactly. We're diving deep into Jonathan Haber's analysis of massive open online courses, you know, MOOCs.
And this is a story that, honestly, every learner today should probably understand. Because back in 2012, the noise around MOOCs was just deafening.
We're going to tsunami.
Right. This tech wave that was going to wipe out tuition fees, maybe even replace universities entirely and just, you know, spread knowledge everywhere, democratize it.
Such a huge promise. So, the mission for this deep dive using Haber's work as our guide is really to ask, did it work? Did that amazing tech promise actually deliver?
Did MOOCs bring about that global revolution they talked about?
Yeah.
Well, Haber's take is actually really useful here. He argues, pretty convincingly, that MOOCs totally failed as a revolution. That big disruption everyone predicted didn't happen.
Okay.
But, and this is the really crucial part, they absolutely succeeded as this powerful evolutionary catalyst. They basically forced traditional education to change.
How so?
They sped up these vital conversations about cost, about quality, accessibility, changes that you can still feel today in almost any degree program or online course.
Interesting. Okay, let's bring in the author himself, Jonathan Haber. He's an educational researcher, but what makes his perspective, you know, stand out? Why trust his take?
Well, he's got the background, sure. Consultant, writer, expert in ed tech and curriculum development. He knows the system from the inside.
Right.
But what really sets him apart, I think, is that he threw himself into the middle of it. He didn't just study it, he lived it.
You mean the Degree of Freedom Project? I remember reading about that.
Exactly that. He actually tried to earn a full Bachelor of Arts degree using only free online stuff, mostly MOOCs.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. He wasn't just some academic looking at data from afar. He was the ultimate power user, right? Spending years trying to stitch together a real education from this brand new kind of messy online world.
That must have given him such a ground level view, all the frustrations, the motivation challenges, the actual learning problems.
Totally. He got this incredibly practical insight. It wasn't just about, you know, completion rates on a spreadsheet. He understood why someone smart and motivated might just drop out halfway through.
He saw the dream and the reality side by side.
Yeah, the amazing potential of open access, but also the frankly isolating experience of trying to learn really complex stuff completely alone with thousands of other people.
Okay, so let's turn to the book itself.
Yeah.
Just called MOOCs, right? Simple title. Positioned as this clear-eyed look, cutting through all that hype from the year of the MOOC, what's the main story it tells?
It's actually structured really nicely. It starts by defining what MOOCs even were, then looks at why they stumbled, and finally, what their lasting impact really is.
So not just a single thing, MOOCs, but a complicated tool.
Exactly. A tool that, you know, maybe solved one problem, like getting content out there, but created a whole bunch of new ones at the same time.
And he walks us through it, step by step.
Yeah, he starts with this really important split in philosophy that most people outside education probably missed, the CMOOCs versus the XMOOCs.
Right, we'll need to unpack that.
Definitely. And he tracks the big platforms, Coursera, edX, Udacity, and how their business models had to change, you know, constantly pivot.
And then there's the data. Those huge enrollment numbers.
Yeah.
But terrible completion rates, like under 15%, wasn't
it? Often even lower, yeah. And Haber uses that data, but not just to say they failed. He uses it to build his case for the real legacy.
Which was?
The catalyst effect. The biggest impact wasn't really on the students directly, but on the universities themselves. They got scared.
Fear is a motivator.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That fear pushed them to invest serious money in their own online learning, rethink how they taught, and ultimately improve things for all their students on campus or online.
Okay, let's get into those details. You mentioned that initial excitement, Haber calling it a tsunami in 2012.
Yeah, you really can't overstate it. It kicked off with that Stanford AI course, Sebastian Thrun. Suddenly, 160,000 people signed up. Overnight.
It was mind-boggling scale.
Totally unprecedented, and it felt like, wow, this is it. This is the end of universities as we know them.
But Haber says the word MOOC actually hid this, like, philosophical battle. Two different ideas mashed together.
Exactly. You had the CMOOCs first. The C stands for connectivists. These were the original pioneers, much more philosophical.
Connectivists?
Yeah. The idea of connectivism is that learning happens across a network. It's about people connecting, discussing, creating together, very decentralized. Think learners teaching each other.
Okay. So if the MOOCs we mostly heard about, the XMOOCs, were like one professor broadcasting to thousands.
And CMOOCs were more like thousands of people trying to learn from each other in this massive online space, a very different feel.
So why did the XMOOCs take over, Coursera ADX?
Because they scaled the traditional model. An expert professor, video lectures, automated tests. It was familiar and easier for big universities to produce and control. Centralized.
And Haber puts this in context, right? It wasn't totally new.
No, he reminds us it's just the latest step in distance learning.
Yeah.
Think way back to 19th century correspondence courses, then the Open University, early e-learning. XMOOCs just added massive scale and university branding.
Right. But scaling brought its own problems, especially with actually teaching all those people effectively. The pedagogy.
That's the core tension. The XMOOC model was mostly short videos, you know, chunked content, easy to digest.
And assessment. How do you grade 100,000 assignments?
Well, mostly multiple choice quizzes, easy to automate, but pretty limited in what they can assess. Or for more complex stuff like essays or coding, they relied heavily on peer assessment.
Ah, peer assessment. Students grading each other. Sounds efficient.
In theory, yes. Saves the professor drowning in papers.
Mm-hmm.
But Haber points out the big problems in practice. Quality control, basically. Are students really equipped to give good, constructive feedback? Often not. So you get inconsistent grading, frustration. It scales the work, but maybe not the learning or the reliability.
So you scale the info delivery, but not the deep understanding, the feedback, the mentorship.
Precisely. Those things are really hard to scale effectively.
What about the community? With so many people, did discussion forums just become chaos?
Pretty much, yeah. Imagine trying to have meaningful discussion or find help when thousands of posts are flooding in constantly. It just breaks down. Real dialogue, real connection, almost impossible at that scale.
The model wasn't built for it.
It was built for delivering content efficiently, not necessarily for deep engagement or community building.
And that leads us to what Haber calls the democratization paradox. The big promise was education for everyone, especially the underserved globally.
Yeah, the access was definitely democratized. Amazing content from top universities was suddenly free online for millions.
But who actually used it?
That's the paradox. The data was pretty clear and maybe a bit disappointing. It wasn't mainly the underserved in developing countries.
Who was it then?
Overwhelmingly, it was people who already had degrees. Professionals in developed countries looking to upskill or just curious. The educationally rich got richer, in a sense.
Oof, that's tough.
Yeah.
And that reality must have put huge pressure on the initial free-for-all business model.
Absolutely. You can't run these massive platforms for free forever. The servers, the staff, it costs millions. So the idealistic open model had to become more pragmatic. It shifted to freemium.
Okay, so how do they start making money?
The first big success was the verified certificate. Pay a fee, prove you are who you say you are, and get a certificate when you complete the course.
Ah, so the credential had value, especially for employers.
Exactly. It signaled completion and identity verification, but that wasn't the end game.
What came next?
They started bundling courses, creating these structured programs like specializations on Coursera or nano degrees from Udacity.
Like a mini degree focused on a specific skill set.
Precisely. A series of related courses, maybe a project at the end. They could charge more for these, and they were really attractive for career changers or for corporate training deals. Companies needed specific skills fast.
And then the really ironic twist, they ended up partnering with the universities they were supposed to disrupt.
Yeah, that whole disruption narrative just kind of faded away. The platforms realized they couldn't replace universities, so they started working with them.
Wow.
Offering pathways into university programs, things like MicroMasters, where you complete a set of MOOCs, and that gets you advanced standing or credit towards a full master's degree at a partner university.
So they became like flexible feeders into the traditional system.
That's a good way to put it. It cemented their role as part of the evolution of education, definitely not a revolution replacing it.
Okay, so beyond the business side, what are the big lasting lessons Haber draws from this whole experiment? What should we take away?
He highlights a few key themes that are still super relevant for anyone involved in online learning. First up is the limits of scalable pedagogy.
Meaning?
Meaning MOOCs prove pretty definitively that things like critical thinking, mentorship, really personalized feedback, They're just incredibly hard to automate or scale up massively.
Technology can spread information wide, but maybe not deep.
Exactly. It can amplify a great lecture to millions, but it struggles to replicate that interactive human loop that's often crucial for genuine deep learning.
Okay, theme number one. What's next?
Theme two is about redefining educational success. This tackles those terrible completion rates we talked about, the 5 to 15%.
Right. Seems like a clear failure metric. How does Haber argue against that?
He says we're using the wrong yardstick. Judging MOOCs by university graduation standards misses the point for many users.
How so?
Think about why people take these courses. Many are just browsing, or they only need one specific module, maybe two videos, to solve a work problem or learn a quick skill.
So if a programmer learns one specific technique from 10% of a course and uses it successfully, that's a win for them, even if they never finish the whole thing.
Exactly. Their goal wasn't the certificate. It was targeted knowledge acquisition. So for that learner, the MOOC was a success. We need to consider diverse intentions.
That makes sense. Different goals require different measures of success.
Okay.
And the third theme.
This is maybe the biggest one, the catalyst effect.
The idea that MOOC's main impact was indirect.
Yes. Haber argues the MOOC fever, as you called it earlier, was actually productive. It scared the daylights out of traditional universities.
And that fear spurred action.
Right. It forced them to finally invest seriously in their own online learning infrastructure, improve their teaching with technology, and think harder about their value proposition. This led to wider use of things like blended learning or the flipped classroom.
So ironically, MOOCs might have benefited the students inside traditional universities the most, by forcing those institutions to up their game.
In many ways, yes. That ripple effect, that institutional change, might be the most profound legacy.
Haber's book also has some really quotable ideas, right? Can you share a few key ones?
Absolutely. They really crystallize the main points. Here's the first, summing up that catalyst idea. The greatest legacy of the MOOC movement may not be the courses themselves, but the conversations they've forced universities to have about their own teaching methods, cost, and role in the 21st century.
That nails the core thesis. The conversation was the product.
Exactly. Then there's this one about completion rates, capturing the nuance. To judge MOOCs by their completion rates is to misunderstand the diverse intentions of their students. However, to ignore those rates is to ignore the profound difficulty of learning alone at scale.
Ooh, I like that. It admits the problem learning alone is hard while also defending the diverse user goals. It's not just an excuse.
Right. And finally, a really fundamental point about ed tech in general. Technology amplifies good teaching and exposes bad teaching. It doesn't magically transform either.
That's crucial. Tech is just a tool. Putting bad pedagogy online just makes it bad pedagogy at scale.
Precisely. The underlying teaching quality is what matters most.
It's so powerful. Okay, let's bring this home. How can we, you know, apply Haber's insights in our own lives or careers? Let's start with the individual learner.
For you, as a learner using online platforms, the big takeaway is be strategic and self-reliant. Know your goal. Are you just exploring, or do you need that certificate?
Because the platform itself might not provide the support structure.
Right. If you need the credential, you have to be proactive. Find your own community, set your own deadlines, build in accountability. Don't expect the massive course form to do it for you.
Good advice. What about using MOOCs or similar things for career advancement?
Here, Haber's analysis of things like nanodegrees and specializations is really useful. These structured programs are recognized by employers, especially in fast-moving fields like tech.
So completing one signals more than just the skill.
Yeah, it signals motivation, self-discipline, keeping your skills current. Those are valuable traits for employers, so they can be a smart career move if chosen carefully.
And finally, for any educators or instructional designers listening, the big lesson is don't just dump lecture videos online and call it a course. That was the early MOOC mistake.
Design for interaction.
Yes. Design for engagement, for active learning. Use the data and the lessons learned from the MOOC experiment to build better blended or fully online experiences that actually leverage technology to enhance learning, not just deliver content.
Okay, final thoughts. For me, what really stands out from this deep dive is how the MOOC story shows that sometimes even a partial failure can be incredibly productive. That disruption fever really did shake up higher ed's inertia in a necessary way.
Yeah, it forced a much-needed reckoning. And for me, the biggest takeaway echoes Haber's caution against technological solutionism.
Believing tech alone will fix complex human problems.
Exactly. MoSCs reminded us that while tech is amazing for distributing information, real deep learning often needs those very human elements. Community, dialogue, mentorship. Those things are harder to scale, sure, but they're often essential. We can't forget that.
A powerful reminder. It truly showed both the incredible potential and the real limits of scaling education.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.